Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Welcome, friends. Welcome, family. What's up, Ma? Welcome to the Damage Report. You guys, on a Tuesday, I'm J.R. Jackson. Good to see you guys on a Halloween Tuesday. Hope you guys are dressing up. I saw some neighbors step outside before they take their kids to school wearing ridiculous things, skeletons, bones, pumpkins, things like that. It's like the adults have more fun with this holiday, at least during the day, than kids do at night. But also, if you checked your friends' feeds over the weekend, they were getting into debauchery too. Let's get into a bunch of debauchery today, but to help me do this, I mean, I couldn't think of anyone better. Wozni Lombard joins me on the program today to help me out with this. No costume, over there just chilling at home, doing nothing specific for this very important holiday that everyone looks forward to. What's up, Woz? Why are you slacking?
I'm good. I'm chilling, man. I just realized I can always go with angry black man as my costume. That's my costume today. I'm angry, goddammit.
Is there anything that's ever angered you? I want you guys to think about this. Think about Wozni Lombre and imagine him frowning, mad, or even yelling at someone.
It's usually food related. Hunger angers me, JR.
Or I think I have the key. Or it's if your cat tower falls over and your kitten is upset.
Because this cat this man tower posted is too sturdy. About,
it's ridiculous. What are you doing here?
You are like the fifth person that I've gone on air with between my various work things to be like, can we please talk about the cat tower?
I want you guys to talk about Woz's cat
tower. I'm looking at it right now, JR. There's one, two, three, four levels to it's four floors.
That's a mansion.
My building itself has four floors. So
hey, if you can't live in luxury, why should Garfield, whoever your cat's name, live in luxury too? There's a lot happening. I apologize for talking about the cat so much. You know, sometimes I like to catch up with the homie. Good to see you, Woz. It's going to be a fun time here for the next hour and a half. I hope you guys are buckled in and happy and safe. I forgot to tell you guys one very important thing before we start. Oh, there's John Iadarola. John, last week I texted him. I said, I'm about to start your show. What message do you have for your people? He answered me, and guess who didn't relay the message? Me. So I asked him again today, and he says, let's see. Tell them I'm considering returning, but I'll need offerings of Pop-Tarts to make it a guarantee. He's on his way back in about a week or so. Who knows? I can't remember. But John still loves you guys. Looking forward to seeing you guys again. Let's go ahead and get started since we talked about everything else before we get into this. Donald Trump, he's still in court. Things are happening with him. Now he's got his daughter wrapped up in the things. Let's watch.
The thing to watch just in the next week is not someone who's going to fold, but Ivanka Trump testifying against her husband, against her father, compelled by the court. And basically, it's the old legal adage, you know, those families who commit crime together testify together.
Awful.
These slanted libs talking about Ivanka Trump now testifying in the case with her husband, father. He was a little confused on the exact relation here. But Ivanka Trump is now going to be testifying since she was a big part of the Trump organization as they go through these proceedings, one of the 91 that he has to deal with. Let's go to some of the details of this and how upset Trump is over it. Now, this was originally scheduled to proceed. She was originally scheduled to precede her father on the witness stand. And Ivanka Trump will now follow him as the final witness called by James's lawyers. That's Letitia James's lawyers. Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump are scheduled to testify on Wednesday and Thursday. Donald Trump is expected on the witness stand November 6th. So this is about her role in the Trump organization. And we've been seeing all these different folks. We even saw some of the right-hand men talking about the way he inflated assets, decreased certain things to get the benefit. This is her role in it. She left her job as a Trump Organization executive vice president in January of 2017. And during her years at the organization, she was involved in negotiating and securing financing for various properties, including a lease and a loan for a Washington hotel and loans for a Doral, Florida golf resort and a hotel and condo skyscraper in Chicago. It's according to those court filings. And this is where her sketchy behavior is interesting for the prosecutors. In court papers that included emails and other documents, state lawyers said that the Trump Organization and its staff also have bought insurance for Ivanka Trump and her businesses, managed her household staff and credit card bills, rented her apartment, and paid her legal fees. All the benefit of being, I guess, a big part and head of this organization. And she isn't facing any penalties on this, by the way. She's just there to then testify about what she knew and what she was involved with there. So she's off the hook, and they've agreed to go ahead and let that happen. And mostly because of how old these claims are against her. But dad or husband, according to that first guy there, wasn't very happy about it. Really fast, Waz, let me read Donald Trump's disconnected response to this. It says, my daughter, Ivanka, was released from this fake Letitia James case by the Court of Appeals. But this Trump-hating, unhinged judge who ruled me guilty before this witch hunt trial even started couldn't care less about the fact that he was overturned. I also won on appeal on statute of limitations, but he refuses to accept their decision. I truly believe this is crazy, but certainly, at a minimum, crazed in his hatred of me. This case should never have started and now must be dismissed. Final statements were low, not high. I think low is the, low. When something's low, it's also not high. Anyways, had a 100% disclaimer clause. Banks were fully paid on time, on schedule, with never even a minor default. There was no victim except me. Any other judge in the country would have thrown this case out on day one. He's out of his he's out of control nut job who fined me $10,000 over a ridiculous gag order so that the publicity for the day would take over from the fact that racist James and the judge's star witness admitted lying to Congress on the stand. Case over. Bro, I can't follow. Maybe I'm tired. Maybe it's a little too early in the morning for me. Maybe I stayed up too late. I don't know, but I have no idea what the hell he's talking about. Do you, Waz?
I mean, I think he's obviously worried. Whenever he's actually worried, this is what he does. He sort of lashes out on Truth Social and unleashes all of these truths. And quite honestly, I would be worried, too, if my daughter was testifying on behalf of the prosecution in a case against me. Just the fact that she's even been compelled to go to court at all shows that he's in a bit of trouble here. And that's why I suspect he's behaving in this manner. But yeah, JR, wouldn't you be worried if your daughter was taking the stand against you?
She tends to, I think, tell the truth when she's cornered like this, especially when it comes to legally and on the stand and as they're trying to figure all this whole thing out. So it's probably not one of those instances where you'll see someone say, oh, my loyalty is to Donald Trump and therefore I'm always going to be that way, which I assume she is, but she doesn't say that a lot out loud unless I've missed it. So it doesn't seem like she's the type that would go into, damaging herself more for her father, even though all the benefits that she's received from it. There are other issues that are happening with him, though. He's got multiple proceedings happening, and he's fighting with everyone involved. In fact, things he's getting flipped. Speaking of these long posts that he likes to put on Truth Social, there's another aspect here. Because aside from the whole thing with happening in New York, Donald Trump is also dealing with a reinstated gag order. Yeah, it was lifted from it. I didn't realize that, but he's done enough work that it's back involved. So separate from that Dominion stuff, the stuff that was with trying to overturn elections, things are also not looking for him on the Jack Smith side of this whole thing. So under this order, it was a 9-day pause, and now it's been reinstated because Trump does not shut the hell up. So Trump and all interested parties in the case are barred from making or directing orders to make public statements that target individual attorneys, witnesses, any reasonable foreseeable witness, or court staff involved in the case. Seems pretty straightforward. Let's see what he's dealing with. The restrictions that U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan put back in place on Sunday were ones that she had lifted 9 days earlier to give Trump and U.S. prosecutors more time to argue whether that the original gag order was unconstitutional, as attorneys for the former president had claimed. Now, Trump can now ask a higher court for an emergency stay pending appeal. But in the meantime, he has to shut the F up, is how he responded to it. He said that those limits were unconstitutionally vague, which is a position that was supported by the American Civil Liberties Union. Chutkan said Trump's own actions indicated he understood where the line was. And while the order was on hold, he also posted a comment on social media, calling special counsel Jack Smith deranged. and saying former Chief of Staff Mark Meadows would be a lying coward if he testified for the prosecution. Sounds like witness intimidation. Maybe that's the reasons why there's gag orders. One more part here from Judge Chutkan on unpausing that order. This is her reasoning. The First Amendment rights of participants in criminal proceedings must yield when necessary to the orderly administration of justice. That's what he doesn't want. She also added that Trump offered nothing that made his appeal seem likely to succeed. She said Trump simply fails to acknowledge evidence that his public statements are often followed by harassment and threats against the people that he then singles out. So one last little post here, because, you know, Bill Barr was one of his right-hand men in everything he was doing as well. One of the other folks has turned on him. And of course, Trump, I thought that was fake when he was going after Chris Christie and also Bill Barr and called them fat by not calling them fat, whatever. But this is one more post he had here attacking Bill Barr, which is part of his problem. He said, I called Bill Barr dumb, weak, slow-moving, lethargic, gutless, and lazy, a rhino who couldn't do the job. He just didn't want to be impeached, which the radical left lunatics were preparing to do. I was tough on him in the White House for good reason. So now this moron says about me to get even. His verbal skills are limited. Well, that's one I haven't heard before. Tell that to the biggest political crowds in the history of politics by far. Bill Barr is a loser. More president of the United States. Someone who wants to be president again and who's by far dominating the Republican field in the primaries. And this is the things that he's putting forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, honestly, being that dude's lawyer has to. At first I was like, man, that's got to be stressful. But if you're charging by the hour and now you got to file more court papers because this guy's violating gag orders, I guess that's more money for the firm. Yeah. But holy moly, does he have such disregard for the law? Like, to me, obviously, you know, free speech being one of the founding tenets of the nation. Like, I'm sure he's going to make that argument. But just the idea that this dude could be going through a court case and he just has no regard for any of the procedures and can just be as reckless as anybody we've ever seen who's like a public figure who's on trial. Generally speaking, when public figures are being taken to court, they don't speak to the press.
Right.
They don't speak at all. They don't put anything out until the case is resolved. Donald Trump is taking the opposite approach of that as a public figure. He's just like, yo, I'm going to get people doxxed. I'm going to call people fat. I'm going to brag about the size of my crowds. He's unhinged, honestly.
I tend to not believe when people say, you know, Donald Trump's on the run. He's afraid. He's doing this. He's doing that. And he knows he's already lost. I think he's too deranged to know that. But this leads to a little bit more legitimacy to those types of arguments. So how is he not running scared if he can't stop talking? Because he thinks the only place he can get any kind of win is in public opinion with his MAGA folks. That's why he brings them up all the time. MAGA, MAGA, MAGA. This and that. Always taking shouts out to them because that's who he's trying to appeal to, not to any judge or any kind of jury or any proceedings, because he's already lost. Specifically in one of these with the changing of his finances. Mm-hmm. They already adjudicated that. They're just figuring out how much they're going to punish him for on that. So those proceedings going on there. And he's still yelling about everything. He's also maybe even yelling about something that I'll give him a little bit on. And that's out in Colorado. This is the last part about Donald Trump and his issues for today, at least. There's this 14th Amendment disqualification battle that's also happening in Colorado. There's activists out there that want to keep Donald Trump off the ballot based on his part in trying to overturn the election and that insurrection on January 6th that we keep hearing about. So this is the details of how they're trying to figure this out. And I think he has a little bit of a window here. So these challengers argue that their litigation was an unfortunate but necessary step to ensure that a fair 2024 election by keeping an ineligible candidate off the ballot. In addition to opening statements, a Capitol Police officer who was on the front lines of the assault and Representative Swalwell, everybody knows him, a Democrat who recounted the horrors of running from the pro-Trump mob. They both testified it for the challengers here in this case. And it revolves around Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. It says that U.S. officials who take an oath to uphold the Constitution, usually presidents, are disqualified from future office if they engaged in an insurrection or have given aid or comfort to insurrectionists. However, the Constitution is vague about how this ban should be enforced. It's only been used twice since the 19th century. So the fact that he was a part of the speech that led them down there, and then afterwards, every January 6th participant or person who's been convicted on trial for this, I don't know what the aid and comfort is. Maybe that's the vagueness of the Constitution that they're talking about. But there's definitely some comfort that was given there verbally from Donald Trump. I don't know if that crosses the line enough. So the trial is expected to last for a week. And the judge said that she wants to issue her decision by Thanksgiving. This should happen pretty quick. And it should play out before the Republican primary in Colorado, of course, for this particular part to happen. So the lawyer from Trump said this, Scott Gessler. He's a former Colorado Secretary of State, and he blasted the proceedings and said the case was weak, anti-democratic, and relied on fringe theories. He urged Colorado District Judge Sarah Wallace to not interfere in the 2024 election by removing Trump from the ballot there. So this is the one thought I have here, Wise, though. It's one of those things where I may be on the weak side of it, where I'm thinking if they, I see the basis for removing him in Colorado. I just don't know if that would help. Because, again, you have rabid supporters. And this isn't to cater them, because I always hate when people say, well, the supporters are so mad and angry, we can't do anything because they might come and try and kill us. F that. But I'm more talking about how it's not going to change whether or not he's leading with the primary field there, or even if he wins the primary, because it's by so much. If nothing else, it gives him one more grievance, I think, to complain about.
Yeah, honestly, and I'm of the opinion that we get the democracy that we deserve in the sense that this guy has legitimate support. You know, like if his people want him, then they should have him. But like that's just, you know, getting him out on a technicality seems kind of cheap to me. I wish, you know, that he had an opposition that was competent enough that just the fact of his existence, all of the court cases, all of the mishaps, all of the nonsense that he's doing, that he would lose his support and his opposition would be ascended. But of course, his opposition is the Democratic Party. And so that's not the case, right? And so that's the way I see it. I'm like, why can't Democrats court more voters than they currently are able to, right? I see that as a problem of the Democrats and, you know, the idea that this guy, oh, and like you're right, it wouldn't be illegitimate to take him off, but it would be a technicality. And so just the idea that they would be doing that, I don't see the utility in that.
Well, there's timid Democrats, and I wonder to what degree they can do something. Because, look, they have, you know, certain sections of power. When Obama came in office and they had control of the executive of both Congress and the Senate, you know. And then so when that went down and then they didn't do everything they could have, I see sometimes issues if there is, you know, you have a split government and therefore we're worried about alienating a certain number of people. But the thing is, if you start implementing things or then say what it is, maybe you'll sway some voters. I think it's such a division and such a lack of reality among so many people's minds, which we're going to talk about in a second. It's hard to sway the hardcore MAGA folks, which, by the way, we'll do after this break, because there was one of the friends of the show, David Schuster, bravely spoke to many Trump supporters outside of an event, as we tend to do sometimes. And his patience is the main thing that we should discuss after this break, because the things that we heard and the things that people actually think and actually would do if they don't get their way behind Donald Trump is outstandingly ridiculous. We're going to do it in a second. We'll talk about all that after we talk to you guys in this break.
If Donald Trump does not win, What do you do?
I hope that I'm going to die.
You want to die if Donald Trump doesn't win?
I don't want to live like this anymore. You like our country the way it is now?
What is it that is so bad about where America is or where you are right now with America that you would want to die if Donald Trump doesn't win?
I just don't want to live in a country that is as screwed up as this one, that people are so out of control and that they think that everything that they're entitled to everything.
I'd like some details. Maybe he got there and it was just the more fun parts. But there's one Trump supporter who apparently is ready to die if Donald Trump doesn't win. If Donald Trump doesn't win, she'd like to die. I'm not sure how she would choose to do such a thing. Or there's this other simple thing, because she says she doesn't want to live in a country that's so crazy. You can do what many Republicans and conservatives always tell folks to do. Move. And it's actually, that's not even like a get the hell out of here, we don't need you type of thing. There's plenty of libs that are moving. So it's not like it's one of those things where you have to stay or there's some kind of rule against it. It's just a matter of another country wants your ass there either. But this is the level of minionship and foot soldier behavior that we're dealing with. If Barack Obama, anyone else isn't elected, trust me, there's so many people who wouldn't be like, I need to die now. Maybe there's a few, But it's probably not the normal thought process for many of the supporters who may say it out loud in front of someone who's asking them and they think that it's such of a flex. We're going to go through a bunch of these, Waz, but I saw you doubled over when that lady said that.
I mean, she wants to die. And again, I think it just speaks to how Donald Trump makes these people feel. Just the idea of his presidency makes them feel good. It's not necessarily that, you know, he's going to pass a bunch of policies and, you know, he's going to have this Republican House and Senate and he's going to sign all these great bills that are going to turn America into this utopia. These people just feel nicer knowing that Donald Trump is president for whatever reason. It's all psychic because she can't name something that Donald Trump is going to do to make her or anyone else's life better. She just feels it. She can just intuit that it's better.
We've flipped the representative government that we're supposed to have. Now the constituents, for at least folks like Trump, think that they're supposed to represent him instead of him representing us. So they're thinking whatever it is he's about, we have to co-sign no matter what. And if he wins personally, we win. Bro, you don't have anything. In fact, he's taking things from you to get these wins. But still, whatever. That's the way they think. There's someone else that thinks they're so closely knit and tied to Donald Trump that they've got the evidence that James Comer doesn't have, that Jim Jordan doesn't have, and that also Donald Trump doesn't have. This guy's talking about it.
Everybody's got frigging evidence of Joe Biden doing corruption. I got some on my phone, matter of fact. So these are the words of Joe Biden right here. If I can get my phone, that's okay.
You have to read it for me because I don't have my glasses.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. So he said, we are in a situation where we have put together, and you guys did it for President Obama administration before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics. Joe Biden, end quote.
He was talking about voter fraud organization.
Yeah.
It's like stopping voter fraud.
No. He said he put the biggest voter fraud in American history.
Where did he say that?
That was in October before the...
I'll have to look it up.
I think Schuster wants to know where in that sentence that you put on your notepad said that. Joe Biden. Listen, man, just because their leader, Donald Trump, is like, you know, a cartoon criminal. He's like, who's the guy from Austin Powers?
Dr. Evil.
When Dr. Evil literally could not do his evil without telling everybody his evil that he's going to do every time. And then his kid in the movie was like, why don't you just do it? Why are you telling everybody? It's the typical villain thing from every cartoon. Why would anybody announce their full plan for how they're going to break the rules and break the law and then be the most anti-American president ever? The reason they believe Joe Biden would say such a thing and then actually do that is because their leader does it. He points out every illegal act he's willing to do, has done, and is going to do later and go, I'd be stupid if I didn't do it. That's how he began his campaign back in 2015, 2016. I break rules and I'd be stupid not to because I'm Donald effing Trump. That's what he said. And then ever since then, he's done the same thing.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's one of my main critiques of a lot of the hive mind on the right wing. And I say this all the time, like it's not enough that Hillary Clinton or, you know, a bunch of other Democrats, Chuck Schumer, maybe they're corrupt. Maybe they have bad political views. Maybe they're bought and paid for politicians. It's not enough to feel that way about them. They also have to be running a child sex ring out of a pizza shop, right? Like, it's just not enough to see these folks as people who you don't trust and have different politics from. And I think that's the same thing we're seeing here from this Carpenters Union homie, which I thought was quite hilarious that he's representing his union and MAGA at the same time when Donald Trump, you know, the Republican Party, has there ever been, not that the Democrats have, especially for the last 30, 40 years, been the biggest friends to unions, but the Republican Party, like, come on, man. St. Ronnie broke the damn unions up. They've been union busting since God knows when. And the idea that you would be a union member in support of MAGA and Donald Trump is quite hilarious. But yeah, obviously these accusations are baseless and conjecture and stuff that you see on the fringes of the internet. But the fringes of the internet are dominant sort of power base within the Republican constituency, right? And so that's what we see here.
It's insanity. It's another example again of constituents, his supporters representing him rather than the other way around.
The biggest problem, I guess the biggest problem right at this point to me would be that all these people coming in across the border.
What is the issue with the people coming across the border? Are you afraid of them? What's the...
I don't know who they are. And now they keep showing that the ones that are coming are all the age of young men who could fight. So do we want an army against our army?
What is it about the illegals that's so problematic?
They come in not wanting the American dream. Like, years ago, the illegals came in for the American dream. They came here to work and make a better life for them and their family.
But I thought that's what they're crossing now. They all say, you know, we're escaping violence in Ecuador and Honduras and all these sort of places.
To me... they're coming in to ruin this country. We're going to get attacked in the middle of this country because of some of the illegals that we can't vent are coming in, and that's their way in to get us.
The basis for all this is fear. Look, how much do we tout and talk about the strongest, most precise, badass military in the history of the world? We're going to let a few migrants roll in and destroy. She said, do we want folks coming here that we don't know who they are, then fighting our army? Maybe we should, because our army whoops everybody's ass. I thought that's what we brag about all the time. We spend trillions of dollars on this army to do all this stuff across the world. But for some reason, if some folks come across the border, then that's the biggest threat in American history. They're going to come and fight our armies. It's insanity. But the thing is, once you have folks clutching their pearls and afraid of everything that moves, then you can tell them what to be afraid of and then what not to be afraid of. As someone's trying to dismantle our democracy and take over the country and implement some kind of like single person rule, that's not scary at all. What's scary is she goes, I don't know who those folks are. Do you need to be introduced to them? Maybe you know their names, their backgrounds, who their parents and uncles and aunts were. What is it about you that you need to know? Because there's plenty of folks that get stopped at the border still and they complain about those numbers. The numbers of people getting stopped at the border is what you should be celebrating, because that's what you don't want, is tons of people coming over. Doesn't have to make any sense. Just be afraid. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think there's... again, you know, to be charitable to the views of these MAGA people, I think reasonable people, even people who are Democrats, could say every country, you know, a sovereign country deserves to have a border, deserves to regulate who comes in and out, deserves to, you know, have a say in who they make permanent residents and citizens and yada, yada, yada. I don't even think that's like some radical thing to say. However, we should have a process for vetting these people, specifically when they're coming from places in South America, like Venezuela specifically, that the outcomes over there have been greatly dictated by U.S. policy. Our government's policy towards Venezuela has created a lot of these outcomes. And so we're the ones that displace these people, make their living situation so untenable as a government in the first place. The idea that we shouldn't have some people come here to try to escape that, and that they shouldn't be allowed, you know, to be asylum seekers or refugees is absurd to me, right? And the thing is, we are vetting these people. They are trying to make cases and open applications to become legally permanent citizens of America. And so, you know, this lady's fears are basically unfounded, but, you know, those kind of fears get stoked a lot over there on the right wing.
A lot of times I see this type of stuff, and the basis for people's arguments and debates and hatred for someone with a different political opinion is that their intention is different. So the intention that they'll tell these folks, that people who don't want to, you know, throw up a wall or then have armed guards.
Well, they're just inventing new Democratic voters, JR. That's what they like to go with, which again is ridiculous. If you see what, you know, Latin males in the state of Florida and even Texas are, how often they're voting Republican these days. So even that argument, they got to throw it in the trash. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the things they say. They just want to make new Democrats.
Well, the intent, well, yeah, they'll say the intent is that, and it gets people upset and fearful. And the intent on the other side, like our idea of the intent for folks who want to, you know, erect more walls and do all this very violent stuff to folks is that, you know, they're racist and they just hate people, which, sorry, I believe that. But at the same time, if the, in order for something to actually be done, I think a lot of times the assumptions about people's intentions have to be quelled. So that's why many times the questions I would ask these folks is, what do you think we should do? And many times they'll say something violent. But how does that end? Violence begets more violence. And as folks who don't want to see all this violence or maybe fight back against you because you're being a bully and killing people who really don't have any way to fight back. So we never get anywhere. And I think that's what always ends up happening. We never actually talk about people's actual intentions and how to come up with a plan. Because sure, there's a problem at the border. But what do we do about it? Why is there a problem at the border? That's never asked. It just goes, we need to start attacking these people because they're coming to do this, this, and that. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And it's childlike type of opinions to have. So if we actually get into it and let people who can work this do it the right way, maybe we'll get somewhere. But we folks in power don't have any intention of trying to get us anywhere.
With AI, fraudsters can take 3 seconds, and you all know this, 3 seconds recording of your voice. I've watched one of me on a couple of times. I said, when the hell did I say that? But all kidding aside, 3 seconds recording your voice and generate an impersonation good enough to fool, you know, I was going to say your family, fool you. I swear to God, you take a look at it. It's mind-blowing. And they can use it to scam loved ones into sending money because they think you're in trouble. That's wrong.
I know Joe Biden's talking to folks who maybe don't know about this, but, you know, watching it, it seems like he's telling people, did you guys know there's this technology where they can fake who you are? I wouldn't even know it. They can scam you for money. Yeah, we know it. I know it, but still. I guess you got to tell the people who don't know. Joe Biden there is doing some things as far as AI and trying to limit the types of damaging things that maybe some of these AI companies could allow the technology to pull off. Here's some of these things he's planning with this executive order, since Congress hasn't done much so far. The executive order exerts oversight over safety tests that companies use to evaluate conversation bots such as ChatGPT. It also introduces industry standards like watermarks for identifying AI-fueled products, among other regulations. The batch of reforms amounts to the strongest set of actions any government in the world has ever taken on AI safety, security, and trust. That's what the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, Bruce Reed, also said. This is what's in it, you guys. Companies must conduct safety tests and share the results with the federal government. Oh my God. A key rule established under the executive order demands that AI companies conduct these tests of some of their products and share the results with government officials before the new capabilities become available to consumers. And if a safety assessment returns concerning results, the federal government could force a company to either make product improvements or abandon a given initiative. And one high-profile new standard would actually codify the use of watermarks that alert consumers when they encounter a product enabled by AI, which could limit the threat posed by imposter content such as deepfakes. And another rule would ensure that biotechnology firms take appropriate precautions when using AI to create or manipulate biological material. And the industry guidance will function as suggestions rather than mandates. That's the main part here, leaving firms free to set aside the government recommendations. So it's a little bit of oversight, and it's some rules maybe in place they could use if they want to be within the standards or whatever they're asking for, but it's definitely not a mandate. And I'm not sure if you saw this, Waz, but I remember I'd heard about it, and I finally looked it up this morning, of who was it? One of the Bella Hadid. And there was that deep fake of her as she's been staunchly in support of these innocent Palestinians that are being killed. And basically her flipping the script and saying she understands everything and this attacks are coming to Israeli citizens and all that. And I don't know how many people were fooled by that, but what I saw was an obvious deep fake, even though it was well done. At the same time, though, how much better is it going to get soon?
Yeah, I'm a bit cynical about it, JR, to be honest. Just think about something like the food industry that is heavily regulated in this country. However, food manufacturers, or what we call food anyway, these processed foods, the way they manipulate the labeling, it's intentionally to fool consumers into thinking they're buying stuff that they're not. Buying stuff that's healthier, buying stuff that's less processed, buying that kind of stuff. Like, they skirt these freaking rules all the time. And so I'm pretty sure by the time the tech lobbyists get done with Congress, please, man, AI is going to be about fooling us and making us part with our money or our attention so that they could sell us ads and that kind of thing. Like, this is, it's just going to be another way for them to, you know, essentially find ways to keep our attention to sell us more ads.
This might be that part, and that's actually in this couple's graphics. I want to jump down to the fifth graphic here, you guys, though, and speaking about that. That's the natural standard way. And then the fear maybe comes from the negative sides of all that information being out there. And, you know, I've been trying to think of ways, because I had some friends that never found themselves on social media, never found themselves on any of these types of things. And I was like, oh, man, that's kind of, I guess, smart, but also maybe a little boring at the same time. I feel like I'm starting to hit the wall. And I'm going to start, you know, reversing course about how much is out there about me. But still, whatever has happened, let's go to this fifth graphic, because this is what Americans generally think about the use of AI and the type of things that are potentially harmful with it. There's a share of adults who say they have select concerns about AI. So 80%, that top bar there, is AI used in malicious cyber attacks. I think everyone can agree that that'd be a problem. Going down, it's AI used for identity theft at 78%. Not holding those using AI accountable for their actions. People concerned about that 76% of the time. Same for AI being used to harvest and sell personal data. Good. Also, AI used to create deceptive political ads, 74%. And unfair distribution of AI causing harm to disadvantaged populations, dropping rapidly. And then lastly, it being used to replace me at my job, among those employed, at least it says there in parentheses, though. So I think those are the two big things. You know, you start about the advertising, taking people's data, but then also, which has been the original, I think, thought, is how much it's taking people could take certain folks' jobs, and many times those jobs being, you know, automated things that you know, customer service folks may be involved in, and where they then go next. One more chart here, you guys, because this one interests me as well. And this is the main thing about this. I won't go through each one of them, but these are things that Americans had a negative view of AI's impact on privacy, and then they had positive approach on things that it could help. The thing I noticed on the not sure bar on the end there, a large number of people are not sure about whether or not things are good or bad, no matter what the topic is. As obvious as the first one being people finding product services that they are interested in online. But as we go down, we got 35%, 37%, 44, 42, 47, 40. Those are significant numbers of people who are on the I don't know or not sure range, which means nobody knows exactly how this is going to look, how it's going to affect them, how they should approach it. And I'm one of those people. I mean, you seem more definitive about either jumping in or jumping out. Waz, your last thoughts?
I mean, I'm going to avoid it as long as I possibly can. I've just become, as I've gotten older, I've just become skeptical of the utility of a lot of stuff that we call tech or advancements in technology at this point in time. And so, yeah, I'm not like scared, like, oh, AI is coming to kill us in our sleep. I'm not like that. But at the same time, every time, you know, Facebook or, you know, Apple or whoever puts out some new thing that's AI based, I'm not running to it so I could be like, oh, I want to be the first to try this and implement this into my life. I'm not. Absolutely not.
Yeah, something else stuck out to me, because in New Orleans, they're using more facial recognition. Not that this is necessarily AI, but still computer-generated technology to help with normal things like police work. And it's details in this. It's a political article, so I won't go through the details deep. But the idea is the number of times they used it, say it was, I think it was a 15 different you know, suspect sample size. 14 out of the 15 were Black folks, number one, because that's still human selection, who they choose to run the facial recognition through the system against. But then also, 6 out of the 15 that they went through were absolute non-matches and made no sense. And then 3 of those 6 were also no good. So I think out of all of it, 1 actually tracked after it's been a couple of years of them re-implementing this technology, and 1 has actually panned out. And the rest have been false connections and things like that. But the thing is once police then go off of that or feel more comfortable with whatever the technology tells them, who cares if it's good or bad or if it's accurate or not? Police work has to be the thing that does that. sometimes they get lazy. I want to point that part out. As we're talking about new technologies and how it can affect people, even if they don't want to be involved. Let's take this next break. You guys have a lot to say about the last couple stories that we did. But also after that, when we get back, George Santos might be finding his way out of Congress finally. Maybe. We'll see. And it's not because of Democrats, surprisingly enough. And also, we have more studies about hate crimes. They're expensive, bro. They're expensive. Let's talk to you guys in a second. You can always retract later what it is that's been said that's false, but there's enough people that won't see the retraction and it'll go, I heard that one time and that's been my reality now. It's the basis for doing things like this. Let's get moving, you guys. George Santos is fascinating. He may not be around much longer. Let's watch.
And in talking to those New York Republicans, they believe they are close to getting the votes they need to kick George Santos out of the House.
I think we're getting 2/3. There seems to be a good sentiment out there that enough is enough.
I think that people have seen over the last 10 months what a fraud he is. I mean, you know, you read either indictment, there's a clear outline that that lays out the fabrications, the lies, the manipulation of donors and others that he has committed over the last year or longer.
They're coming for him. George Santos is potentially going to be kicked out now because there's a group of Republicans led by Anthony D'Esposito out in New York, and they're tired of, I guess, him just floating by after all the things that have been discovered about all of his past potentially illegal activities. Let's go to some of the details here because he's confident they're going to get that 2/3 to kick his ass out. D'Esposito, alongside a group of New York Republicans, moved to force a vote on expelling Santos last week. You mold those two faces together. Marking the second attempt this year to eject the embattled first-term lawmaker from Congress. This measure was called to the floor last Thursday as a privileged resolution. And that forces leadership to act on that legislation within 2 legislative days. House went into recess Thursday afternoon and is not scheduled to return till Wednesday. I don't know the reason why, but every time I hear about Congress taking 3 days off, 4 days off, just there must be a reason. I'm ignorant to it, so maybe there's a reason. But it's ridiculous. There's more, though. Leadership can now motion to table that resolution or refer it to a committee, both of which would require majority support. If the legislation is brought to the House floor for a vote, it will require the backing of 2/3 of the chamber to then kick him out. And D'Esposito said that he spoke with Speaker Johnson, new Speaker Mike Johnson, before he presented this bill. And this is what Mike Johnson had to say, because it seems like he doesn't really care about Santos. Johnson made it clear, he said, do what you think is right and do what you think is right for New York. And like I said, this is not about precedent. It's about setting a new precedent. If we could set a new precedent, especially from individuals in the House who have tried to fight the status quo, that the House does not welcome liars, fraudsters, and people who have made a mockery of the institution. Setting new standards and precedents. And George Santos is, he could have the response that you would expect. This is the first cryptic one. He said, everything has an end in life. Doesn't sound very confident in his chances of making out of this, but he did clarify later. He said, 3 points of clarification. I have not cleared out my office. I guess people are saying that. I'm not resigning. And I'm entitled to due process and not a predetermined outcome as some are seeking. God bless. Let's watch this ad, this fake Santos commercial that people put out, because this is the type of responses and energy that George Santos is getting. Then we'll get your reaction here, Waz.
My neighbor, AOC, thinks socialism is a good idea. She calls it democratic socialism, which is basically just socialism with glitter on it.
This fall, George Santos stars in the new hit sitcom about one man's journey to becoming a U.S. representative and the tangled web of lies he weaves in order to get there.
My grandparents survived the Holocaust.
Liar-ish. Thursdays, this fall on Fox.
The guy who did that, his name is Gabe Sanchez, and he hosts the What Was That Show? And he put that whole thing together because Santos is ripe for energy like that.
Yeah, I guess there are some standards still left within the Republican Party, some, which is like, you can't just tell 10, 11, 12 wholly untruths, lies about yourself. You can lie about things that you're going to do when you get to Congress, mm-hmm. but you can't lie about your actual life, who you are, just make up stuff, places that you worked, schools that you went to, people that you were friends with, just completely lie 12, 11 times. And be part of Congress. Like at least that is the standard that is set, which honestly surprises me a bit. Just the idea that they would even go forth with something like this, JR.
I guess they finally don't care about that one extra vote. I don't know. Who knows? Or they're embarrassed enough by now. Kevin McCarthy's gone. I don't know. There's some kind of new energy. Maybe they've been embarrassed by that whole process as well, too, and they need to get some kind of legitimacy. And George Santos is not legitimate. Let's go ahead and get this last story. I think we can squeeze this in. Yeah, Mike's nodding his head because Mike knows what's up. Let's go to this hate crime story that I let you guys know about real quick because I have thoughts. There's been a rise in hate crimes, as we already know, across the country, especially anti-Semitic and also anti-Muslim, because that's what humans do for some reason. Now we want to start killing each other more off of something. So here's one argument that people should maybe pay attention to, since I guess violence and murder isn't something that gets people's attention. Maybe money will, because a study from Bard Associate Professor Michael Martell breaks down the cost of hate crimes and how it costs everyone. Bard University their study entitled Economic Cost of Hate Crimes revealed that the cost of these crimes in the U.S. for 2019 was a staggering $3.39 billion with a B. The breakdown for 2019 revealed that non-fatal hate crimes tallied up to roughly $2.88 billion and fatal ones added another $510 million to it. Their analysis found that each incident of rape and sexual assault carries a financial burden of roughly $146,546. And when you consider the 6,657 reported cases of rape and sexual assault, the cumulative annual cost to society amounts to $975,571,328. And it's been pointed out many times, this is off reported sexual assault and these cases of rape and sexual assault. So imagine if they were all reported, how much more it actually affects folks. There's also a graph on it as well, too. But the FBI, on top of this, also reported 13,700 victims of hate crimes in 2022. That's an increase of 929 over 2021. And aggravated assaults, property vandalism, and intimidation were among the top offenses for 2022. And when you consider all those categories, hate crime, as defined by the DOJ in the U.S., over the course of last year, amounted to $553,606,211 and some change. So after all those numbers, Waz, all those numbers, yo, billions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars here, another 100, 510 million here, they get added to it. Rape, assault, hate crimes. Maybe our elected officials will start listening because it's money involved. To that, I say, hell no, they won't. Why would they care? We waste money on everything, and let alone actually doing something about hate crime that would actually be helping people, especially people who generally our elected officials don't pay any attention to because they don't have any power.
Yeah, it seems like a major problem. The spikes have been happening since like 2014 or 15. The FBI has been reporting that these hate crimes have been on the rise and have become a major threat. I'm not surprised that it's really expensive to adjudicate these crimes. But, you know, I'm not confident that our elected officials could actually chart a way forward here. Not the ones that we presently have in business right now. Nothing about this set of folks indicates that they have even the slightest clue as to what to do, because it doesn't feel like that's something that they're focusing their energies on. You know, most of them are just out fundraising and just parroting whatever our corporate betters tell them to do. So I'm not surprised by, you know, obviously there is the human toll, but the financial toll doesn't surprise me one bit.
And it's the thing, who's that burden falling on? You know, there's counseling services, there's communities that get damaged when people are afraid to maybe open businesses in certain places or live in certain areas because of heightened hate crime and things like that. So those are some of the costs that are included in some of those numbers. But then again, why would random guy who's a representative or a senator from Arkansas, Nebraska, Maine, anywhere be like, yeah, you guys, we need to do something about these hate crimes in the country because it's costing other people too much money. People are suffering under it. People are afraid to do certain things. Insurance costs go up if you're going to open things in certain areas. Or you're just afraid to step outside your house. Why would they care when they don't care about anything else that's been going on? It's about, as you said, doing the bidding of the people who pay them, getting back in office, making more money, having more of a prestigious career in Congress or in the Senate or anywhere else as a staffer, whatever it is. But people just generally don't care about this stuff. And honestly, sadly, I want to talk about this story only to point out all those numbers and to point out they don't care. Nothing is going to be done about this. Please. Half of our politicians promote this stuff. So why would they want to do something about it? Because of money. They really, really don't care. I care about you guys. Care enough that if you guys really want to continue and jump on more with everything throughout the TYT network, you can become a member, youtube.com. There it is. Sorry, it's Member Appreciation Week. That's a damn shame. I should have known that. Visit tyt.com/notice for details on Member Appreciation Week. And if you want to be one of those members that gets appreciated, go ahead and go to tyt.com/join. I believe that's it. You guys can do that. Until then, take a hold of your butt cheeks. Hold on very tightly. We'll be back for the aftermath in a few minutes. Yeah, Waz is going to hang on. So please, you do too.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.